Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Thank you all for joining me on the latest Mortcast, part of the CSG Network. I'm, of course, your host, Jeff Morton. Okay, now we have a good nuggets of 150 games, but I'm going to talk to you about, in the first part of this, I'm going to kind of go into my philosophy on turning your brain off, and it's kind of a step-by-step thing that I learned from being a Nuggets fan in the 90s, how to turn your brain off when things are stupid. And by that, I mean the Nuggets beat the Blazers last night in a game that was just stupid. I only casually paid attention to it. And I noticed some people, just observing Twitter, I noticed some people freaking out. And because the Nuggets were just kind of loafing. It was kind of a loafing game. And of course, you had Reggie Jackson as... When you have to unleash Reggie Jackson like that, it's never a good idea. It's going to throw everything off, and it looked like, to be honest with you, it looked like the Orlando Magic when Aaron Gordon was there, particularly when Aaron Gordon had to score a lot. But a lot of that had to do with the fact that this is a Nuggets team that went into it, and knowing that if they give the minimal amount of effort, they would win the game. That will get you in trouble a lot of times, and then when the Nuggets got up by 10, the Blazers suddenly started playing really hard, and the Nuggets were caught off guard. So this is things that happen in the game, but you need to shut your brain off when you get to 10, and right now we're in NBA ridiculous season. There's a couple ridiculous seasons in the NBA. One of them's after free agency, and another one is right now. There's only 11 games left in the season for the Denver Nuggets. There's going to be a lot of tanking teams. There's going to be teams that are resting their players, like the Nuggets were doing last night. Jamal's injured, but there's going to be things like this, and you cannot really glean anything out of these games. This is different from the doldrums era, which is like January into February. Basically, January into mid-February is the NBA doldrums. Right now we're in stupid season, and stupid season means you need to shut off your brain. And let me give you a step-by-step guide from my perspective on how to turn your brain off. And let me start with a little background. As all of you know, I'm a Denver Nuggets fan going all the way back to 1987, basically, is really when I started avidly watching the Denver Nuggets. And I'll say during this, there was a significant stretch from 1990 to 2003 where the Nuggets were absolute dog shit, aside from actually what really amounts to 1 year. That second year with Bernie was, Issel had resigned, and the entire year was messed up. And they lost in three games to the San Antonio Spurs. And it wasn't even close, I'm gonna put it to you that way. So really, there was about 13 years where the Nuggets were dog shit. And you really kind of got used to paying attention to some games and turning your brain off at others, even if you watched them. you know, and I'm not talking about turning off the game. I'm just talking about not critically watching it. And the first thing you've got to do is understand what's going on. That's the very first thing you need to do. This is step number one. Understand what's happening prior to the game. The Nuggets, several hours before the game, announced that Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic will not be playing. It was like 7 hours. We're projecting what we're going to be, how we're thinking about this game kind of thing. When they do it that early and it's not that close to the game, the Nuggets tell you exactly how they themselves feel about the game. So once people knew that yesterday, they sort of said, okay, this is going to be a stupid game. They're playing against a very bad Blazers team that is sort of not really, but kind of tanking. So Nuggets are going to be having a starting unit featuring Reggie Jackson doing his Reggie Jackson thing, and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and having to start DeAndre Jordan because Zeke Nnaji is injured. Okay, you know that before the game. Okay, it was inevitable that that was going to be the starting lineup. If you know that sort of thing, you can approach the game in what I would say is the essential way you can approach this game. Understanding that the Nuggets, as of that win, would be winning their 50th game. If it's a rest game, it's a rest game. The Nuggets have a 5-game homestand coming up. So this next stretch is a game where they may or may not begin to pay attention. If you understand this before going into the game, you don't invest yourself. And I think this is key to shutting off your brain, okay, and going into obsessive over-analysis. This is a thing that will save you stress and will save you from really having to get, you know, people will say, even this applies to media, by the way. People will say, well, we have to cover every game. There's a difference between covering every game and then knowing it's NBA silly season and applying weight and significance to it. So number one, understand the stakes. Number two, know where you're at. The Nuggets are number two in the Western Conference right now, basically tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are five games clear of the Los Angeles Clippers. There may be some tussling going on between the Thunder, the Nuggets, and the Timberwolves. I think it's going to be the Thunder and the Timberwolves. Excuse me, the Thunder and the Nuggets. And the Timberwolves, the Nuggets have 2 games at home against them. We'll deal with that later. But in reality, the Nuggets are where they're at. So they'll drop no farther than number three, unless there's a total collapse, and that's not going to happen. So the Nuggets are, their status is locked into the top three. So knowing that going into the game, okay, you're saying like, okay, now the stakes are different. The stakes, this is number two. Understanding where they're at and the stakes. The stakes are very low in this game. And even if, you know, whatever effort they give, you need to not put too much emphasis on it because the Nuggets know where their stakes are. And you as fans and media members need to know where that stake is. So number two is understanding where you're at. And number three is, since Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray are not playing, and you understand this going into it, you need to not analyze and place too much emphasis on any of the other players because they're playing a terrible team, and this is a game where the Nuggets know that if they put a minimal effort in, they will just get by and get the win, okay? Which is going to lead to number four, which is understanding this is going to be a terrible game. Understanding that sort of thing will de-stress the situation, okay? Having a lack of stress, approaching a game like last night where, you know, on the surface of things, the Nuggets look like they struggle against the bad team. But with all the context for 1, 2, and 3 before, you understand with number four, it doesn't matter. Okay, the Nuggets are you are channeling the way the Nuggets themselves are approaching this game, and understanding that whatever is the results are of this game, you can learn absolutely nothing from them, and that is basically number 4B, is understanding that there's just nothing you can learn from this game. And I think what we you know, Christian Brown had an okay game. Peyton Watson had a bad game. Michael Porter Jr. had a bad game. Aaron Gordon had a good game. And that's basically it. I mean, he had Reggie Jackson, but I wouldn't call what Reggie was doing last night good. But it's not anything that you can apply to anything else for the Nuggets. It's one of those games. It's like when you're playing with your entire starting lineup out. You know, if you go into that thinking like, you know, whatever they do is good, is fine. But you can't do that with a game like this. The Nuggets were missing Jokic and Murray, and you know. I mean, I understand people want the Nuggets to play all the time, but to de-stress yourself, understand that there is nothing you can learn from this game. They're playing a bad team, and the Nuggets themselves weren't exactly exerting the most effort because they were telling you, going back to number one, that wasn't going to be the case. They knew that if they exerted a modicum amount of effort, that they would win this game. The reason you apply these steps and the reason you go by this kind of thing when you get into NBA stupid season is that you understand that whatever the result is, whatever comes out of that game means absolutely nothing in the long run, unless there's an injury. And that is the one caveat to this whole thing. There wasn't an injury. So the Nuggets went into it knowing that they had to produce a modicum amount of effort and they would win the game against a really, really bad Portland Trail Blazers team that was missing Jeremy Grant and all that stuff. That really is where you need to look at it. And once you understand that, and once you go into a game with all of this checklist down, you can casually pay attention to a game without investing jack shit in it. And this is really what the key is. If you don't invest a ton into it, you won't be stressed out when they don't to give you a roaring result because it was predestined that that was going to happen. I think what we fail to realize in a lot of these NBA games, because there's 82 games, is that teams will tell you right from the outset exactly what they are going to do. And this doesn't matter about the coach, and I'm going to get to the coach in the second half of this podcast. It doesn't matter what that is going on. And the players themselves dictate to you exactly how they're going to approach a game. And in the NBA, players are the only real people that matter. And if the Nuggets think that and the players themselves think that they can get through a game and beat a bad Portland Trail Blazers team by putting forth just the basic amount of effort and not looking great, that's all you need to know. The baseline is you kind of check in and out of the game, and then you look at the score at the end. If they win, that's your takeaway. That's it. There's nothing more you can glean from a game like last night. Absolutely nothing. In a day and age right now, and this is something I learned back in the 90s when we didn't have social media and we didn't have all this stuff, and the coverage on even online coverage was basic, really basic, and it wasn't even that advanced. In fact, when in the early 90s, we had Prodigy Internet, and all we could get really was the score, you know. And it was really the AP score, and that would be downloaded onto or uploaded onto the Internet. So, honestly, if you take an advantage, especially I'm talking to media right now, if you look at this whole thing, you'll be like, you can shrug your shoulders. And I know that is anathema to our culture right now to go into a situation without any deep analysis. But to be honest with you, all of us in the media knew that there was nothing you could glean from this game. Absolutely nothing. There was no valuable information that you can get from a game where the Nuggets were resting Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and Christian Brown was one of your leading scorers. There's nothing you can glean from a game like this. All that matters is it was a win. And if you go into games like this, and there's going to be more of them coming in down the pike here this season, folks, if you just kind of go into it like that, you won't be stressed out, and you'll be like, oh, the eyes on the prize, folks. We got to defend our championship, and that is all that matters. All right, in the second half of the podcast, I'm going to talk about Michael Malone, give him some compliments, and kind of give him also some criticism, and people are just going to have to deal with it. So anyway, that'll be happening on the second half of the podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I got into some trouble from various aspects of Twitter the last, week or so, talking about Michael Malone and my dislike of his rage timeouts. You mean, folks, just deal with it. Just deal with it. I hate the rage timeouts. They're stupid, and they don't ever actually produce the result that people think they do. Particularly in the game I was referring to, Malone did a couple of the rage timeouts, and they didn't do anything. And my point about those is that they're for Malone. They're not for the team, which is why I get upset about them. Well, I put out a tweet about it. People reacted. And then a certain media member retweeted it in a completely disingenuous way, quote tweeted me. And I got a bunch of idiots in my mentions. And then I immediately privated my account and deleted the tweets and wasn't going to deal with it. And then once I cleared out the riffraff, I got back to things. But this isn't about that. Despite my complaints, and I'll get to that particular thing, there are compliments I can give Michael Malone. And I think the essential part of his coaching isn't during games. And so there are some coaches who are like that. A lot of I call them preparation coaches. And there's the game plan coaches, which is kind of where Malone falls into this, although that's probably more of an Adelman thing. But this is part of Malone, is like getting the team to where they're at. And in the NBA, just understand this, folks. If you're not one of the best coaches of all time, your role isn't the same as it would be in college. Now that you've got college sports happening right now, you have the NCAA tournament happening right now, and coaches in the NCAA, and you should probably know this now if you're watching the tournament intently, coaches in the NCAA have a tremendous amount of influence on their team, much more than any NBA coach ever could. A coach in the NCAA matters because they're control. They call plays. Each set is a play. It's a longer shot clock. It is certainly different than the NBA. In the NBA, it's more about the players. The most important cog in the Nuggets wheel is Nikola Jokic, and everything filters down from there. I would say that's Jokic, Murray, then Malone. And then, you know, Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. and stuff like that, if we're talking about on the importance hierarchy in the Denver Nuggets. And why I say that is there are steps to how a coach can approach a game. And there's, I would say, not that Malone doesn't help the team, it's that where he helps them isn't during games. And I've always said this, Malone is a very good practice coach, which is probably, you know, practice coach is a preparation coach, and a preparation coach generally does most of their work between the lines. And during the game, it's up to players to execute things, quote unquote. When you have a player like Nikola Jokic, it's his computer brain that's setting everything up. Which is why the Nuggets bench unit struggles so much, because they don't have the leadership of Nikola Jokic, and they kind of have to muddle through. That's how good Nikola Jokic is. And this is probably more of a compliment to Nikola Jokic. Where Malone really sets the tone is with the younger players and in the lead-up to the game. Setting a tone, setting a culture. The biggest thing that Michael Malone did was reversing the Nuggets culture under Brian Shaw. Shaw had lost control of the team. Shaw in the Shaw era had descended into chaos and open revolt by the time you got to March of 2015. Okay. And Malone came in the summer of 2015, and slowly, it took him a couple of years, it slowly began returning around the culture of the Denver Nuggets. They became a lot more stable. Well, some of it had to do with some personnel decisions that were made in 2013. Some of it just had to do with the fact that things just got off the rails. George Karl was no longer the coach. And it took a couple of years to really just get away from that approach to get to this approach. And Malone's changing the culture along with a guy like Will Barton, and really doing that was probably item number one for Malone. Item number two is when he is calm and not reacting emotionally, there is his key. And that is always between the lines. It's from the end of the game to the start of the next game. And those are the things where Malone excels. That is just very specifically where Michael Malone excels in his quote-unquote coaching. And I will give him credit for this because there's not a lot of coaches who are good at that sort of thing. In game, it's kind of give or take. And really, to be honest with you, Malone doesn't really matter unless he's getting tunnel vision and doesn't put in the right player, because coaches control rotations in the actual in-game thing. So rotationally speaking, Malone has a lot of influence. But outside of that, it's really basically all Nikola Jokic, and I hate kind of dismissing things like that, but and people will think that I'm dissing Malone here, but that's not it. And there's a lot of coaches who are like this. Any coach who has LeBron James on the roster does not have much control in game. LeBron James has we saw it with David Blatt in 2015 and how LeBron would change plays, okay? It is just the nature of having someone who is that good on your roster. It's just the way it goes. And that is no slight to any coach. That is just the nature of the NBA and the nature of basketball. Malone's biggest influence is between the lines, between point A to point B. That is the place that he occupies. The points and the actual stars on the map are where Nikola Jokic is the guiding light. He is the one who sets the tone, runs the plays, does everything. He's more than a point guard. He is the one who basically sets the offense. He is the one who establishes the offense. He is the alpha and the omega when it comes to this. So when you have a player like that, you look a lot different. And thank God Nikola Jokic is here because he's a superstar, right? Despite the criticism I got, I do think, and I need to point this out, the rage timeouts, it's been 10 years of Michael Malone coaching in the NBA. He just has to stop this. First of all, for his own health. But second of all, they don't seem to help. And they seem to just be timeouts for him to not be mad anymore. And I think that part is something that we kind of forget. And I think just for his own health and longevity, he's going to burn himself out if he gets into these situations where he is screaming fuck twice at the loud volume, and then they come right out of that timeout and it's the same exact scenario, which is what it was. Which is exactly what it was that game, right? And people don't forget it because fans like that sort of thing. Fans love it. And I'm not, I mean, and my tweets were not directed at fans. It's just a personal thing. I don't like it. I don't think it does any good. Malone has improved as a coach as he has gone on, largely due to the fact that he has actually let go a lot of control. And one of the things NBA coaches, especially if they come from different situations, one of the things NBA coaches come to realize is that they themselves don't have a lot of control over what goes on. That comes back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the segment. Nikola Jokic really is the person who sets everything. He sets the defense and he sets the offense. He is the alpha and the omega. Once coaches kind of understand that they got to give that to their best player, things become a lot easier. You know, George Karl his best coaching came when he didn't have any stars. That was George Karl's by far best coaching. I refer to basically any time between midway through a 2010-11 season when they trade Carmelo Anthony to 2013 was probably George Karl's best era of coaching in the NBA. The Nuggets had no stars, and this was really the George Karl team, which is why he's so attached to the 2012-2013 Nuggets. That was the George Karl achievement, even though I think his best coaching was during the Melo trade year, where he held that team together remarkably. And longtime observers of the Nuggets will know this. When George had no stars out there, he actually, quote-unquote, coached his best. And his rotations were his best. They would be crisp and all that because he had to. He couldn't rely on a star player having to make those decisions through that. And that, I think that is where George excelled. Malone is not quite like that because he is a preparation coach. His best coaching comes at practice. His best coaching comes from relating to certain players on the roster. And I think this is where he has evolved. Even 2-3 years ago, Michael Malone was a control freak. And he really was dictating a lot of the defense. We have no clearer example of a separation of ideals than Chris Finch and Michael Malone when Finch was on the Nuggets in the 16-17 season. That was a marriage that did not work, and it didn't work because both guys have very strong ideals, and Malone was in deep into controlling what he needed to control. More now is that the evolution of time and the evolution of Michael Malone has been to where he understands now he doesn't have complete control, and his last mountain to climb is the rage timeouts. For his own personal well-being, he needs to stop him. I know fans like him. Fans will like histrionics. That has nothing to do with anything. It very specifically, Malone needs to chill for his own health, and he will not burn himself out. Because you cannot be getting that angry when you have, you know, just regular bullshit in-game stuff going on. You just shouldn't be. Especially if they don't get the result that you want after you have said rage timeouts. So keep that in mind. That is his one evolution. For those people who are pissy with me on Twitter, that is my position, and I'm not going to change it. All right, thank you all for joining me on the latest Mortcast. I'll be back probably Tuesday with another episode. Goodbye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.